that the House will come out with one version, the Senate will come out with a different version, this will go to conference committee. I'm going to vote against this amendment because I want a definition in so that the other body sees that we want this thing defined. This isn't the greatest definition in the world, but at least it, and I totally agree with what the chairman has said, and I'm going to vote against the amendment.
Max, can I make an argument on
sure,
that?
You bet.
I don't think this is going to conference committee. There's 21 days left. Whatever comes out of the House, the Senate's going to adopt, and that's going to be it. There is not going to be a conference committee on this bill. But there isn't going to be time for it.
Well, I was going to say that, you know, if we left it out, assuming a certain situation where it goes to conference committee, and you can the House can take a look at what the Senate's come up with, and we can object to that.
This one's on fast track when we leave this committee.
But I'm just saying, you know, assuming those circumstances go on.
Anyway,
amendments
we've totally exhausted this subject, so I'm ready for that.
The amendment, Mr. Chairman, as I understand, the amendments to just leave A and delete the rest, right?
No.
Delete the whole thing.
The question is to delete the entire section, what's the number 8? As many as are in favor of deleting section 8 vision, Mr. Fox, Mr. Phillips, Mr. Taylor, Mr. Sun, opposed, well, it is a tough one, and I can sympathize with your view. I've got some of the same concerns, but I just keep worrying about my 10-year-old daughter. I mean, I guess that's what this tells you what to do. See, when you want my vote, you just give one of these graphic examples.
I don't want to start a whole new line of discussion, but if I could comment, if there were a way that we could take the emergency custody thing out of here, I'd be more inclined to do this. That's real complicated, but that's my fear.
I tell you, okay, this is one of the areas I just really am insisting to look at this year.
Because here's what I'm afraid of in here, and it seems to me, maybe all the cases I run into are this, but it's the kid, something happens at home, doesn't like, goes to school, mm-hmm. tells friends about it, and then you got one smart one in school and says, ha-ha, you want to get back, go to the social worker, right? Because they've already done it. They go down, tell the story of the social worker, which may or may not be somewhat true. Boom, they got to come in because that's all the evidence they have. They grab the kid. We're under this 24-hour, we're in court. And boom, I think there's major problems with it.
You're right, and that's an evil, but I think we've got the lesson. You got to figure out which is the lesser and which is the greater of the evils.
Hard cases make bad law.
Well, every one of them is a hard case. There's not a soft case that you can manage.
As we say in the cotton industry, it's a lesser of two evils.
This was never bigger, right?
Let's we've made a decision. That's something.
I know we have.
That's one of you guys want to move through.
I want to give you one quick story as a basis for why your decision isn't all bad.
Oh.
The clerk in my court, right, her step, I guess it'd be brother-in-law or sister-in-law, whatever, in Wisconsin, lost his job in a fine construction hall of cordwoods. You know, driving night and day, working long hours. Makes it home about once, maybe twice a week, and usually it's late at night. When he comes home, they've got two beautiful little daughters, about 7 and 10. The whole family gets up because daddy's home. And they all have, they're all running around in their pajamas and the rest, but they're up for 2 or 3 hours. The kids go to school the next day. The kids are smiling and happy and telling how daddy came home, and we were all wrestling around on the bed. This is picked up by the teacher. The teacher takes it to the social worker. The social worker takes it on into court, and when the guy comes back from the next trip, he's placed under arrest. And that's the first moment that he or his wife know that anything has gone on. It's a very small community in Wisconsin. It hits the papers, the rest of it. The man is literally in a tough position to begin with. Now he hires an attorney, and he starts fighting the process. It takes about 3 months. At the end of the three-month period, they find out there was absolutely nothing to substantiate the concerns of the social worker, that the entire thing was an overzealous social worker and teacher going bananas on him. Now, as a consequence, the man has lost his home because he had to pay for a tremendous amount of legal expenses. The attorney is still carrying the case forward for him now on a contingency basis. both the teacher and the social worker have been terminated from their jobs, and there's a multi-million dollar suit pending against the state and the departments who did this to this family. Now, that is the kind of insignificant little thing that can happen, and in the process it can totally destroy a family and everything they've earned for 20 years. And so I don't think it's little. And before we invade this province, we better make darn good and sure why we're doing it, because there's a heady movement out there right now to charge forward and do a lot of things. And if you don't think we've got some problems with that movement, all you have to do is go out on the street in your own community of Juneau and pick 20 parents and talk to them about what they've heard going on in their own schools and whether or not they want their children even participating in some of the educational courses that are going on in their schools right now, where children will go home and be afraid to kiss daddy goodnight. That's how far this movement has gone. And I think before we encourage it to go too much further, we'd better have some really tight definitions that everybody can live with and know that we're going to be clean on. Well, that stuff scares me.
This isn't even decided, except as long as you throw that out there, I'll throw out just a quick rejoinder. And that is, what about daddy comes home from hauling cordwood, gets into the bed, and starts fondling? It's not innocent. Under the Alaska law we got right now, without this definition, you got zilch, and so again, I think we focus on the good. Let's don't worry about that now. We've made a decision.
We have time.
That's
a crime.
If there's actually touching of the genitals,
if there's touching of the genitals,
genitals. If you're 2 millimeters below, but let's don't get into
it. Hey, I'm afraid. Let's don't get into it.
We got a whole interim to worry about it because the motion did not pass. Okay. The motion passed, the bill's not there.
How long are we going to go before we...
Well, I'd like to deal with maybe a couple more minutes. Let's figure out until 1 o'clock and we'll adjourn for a half hour. And then
you in Wisconsin?
My next proposal is on page 5, line 7, with regard to section 10. In the half substitute, it's page 6, line 6.
On the work draft, it's page 5.
Would you say that again?
Page 5, line 7.5.
I've lost. Okay.
In the work draft, in the Hess substitute, page 6, line 6.
Oh.
We're starting the feeling through, reporting.
Yeah, we're starting the whole area of reporting. Reporting questions.
Is that a Christian sign?
Mr. Chairman, my... maybe I can just talk rather than offer a motion, just speak for a moment. I do not want to delete this section, but if I don't offer amendment, if this section is not deleted, then there are a series of amendments within the section that I think I would have to offer, because I think the section has become too broad. Let me just highlight it.
Let me tell you before we start on that one thing. This is where the drafting error occurs on section 10. This says repeal it and reenacted. I mean, what do we need to do to make that right? This is there. It's not supposed to be repeal and reenacted.
Not all of 47-1702, because 020 has currently a section, subsection B and C, which are quite good. And in fact, it's identical to B, except a sentence has been left out, and there's a subsection C, and those need to stay in place. So section 10 lead-in would have to say 47-1702A is repealed and reenacted to read.
Except what do you do with B?
Well, and cross B out of this, because B is somewhat of a cleanup, but he left out a sentence. Ed Heim and I couldn't get together yesterday.
Oh, yeah, you
check
can't
on it.
Eliminate C.
Yeah, we can't eliminate C.
Existing law.
Right. And B that you put in here is the same as B in the current law, except that they just left off, these reports shall be made to the nearest office of the department. So I'm sure that's what you want from intent, from what I've heard about the controversy. So just take B out here on the work draft and change
so
this little thing to say 020A.
21 through 25 of the work draft, and on line 7.5, insert 020A.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're going to have to put B in as a second, the new subsection.
It's existing law.
It's an existing law.
But they changed one sentence in it.
That sentence.
Yeah, it's irrelevant.
What we want, is the existing law.
I see. All right.
Well, we're deleting it and leaving it in the current statutes.
Mr. Chairman, again, if I may.
Okay.
get back to my comment. It's just that generally, I just am very concerned about how broad we're making this. The original principle is very well expressed by Representative Gall and others, was to identify those professionals that work, that are in contact with children because of their profession, that they have to report. And I'm just concerned that there are several areas here where we're expanding it too far. Number two, the existing language is school teachers and administrative staff. This would include the maintenance people and the janitors and whoever, so it is broader. Human services provider, I think, speaks for itself. You can look at the definition of human services provider, which, frankly, as much as they've tried, does not narrow the use of that term. The other one is child care providers, number six. That circle, that now says licensed provider, licensed child care providers and paid staff, something like that. So it expands it to unlicensed daycare centers or daycare homes. And of course, number eight, and I don't have any problem with that, I guess, as long as it were tied maybe to a statutory reference so we knew exactly who we were referring to. The point is, as a philosophical matter, I just think it's too broad. I think it's important to make some expansion of it, but I just think this is too far, so I sort of defer to the chair. I could either offer a motion to take it out under the rule that it's controversial, or we could work through it. I do agree, by the way, with your deletion of B and C.
Mr. Grunberg, then Mr.
This is kind of one of the hearts of one of the main sections in the bill, who is to report. And I think that reporting is extremely important. If we're going to have any protection at all, there can be no protection if it's unknown. I would like to see you move your amendment in sections, not just delete the whole thing. I can see, for example, and I'm looking at the present language, for subsection 2, it says school teachers and school administrators and staff members, as opposed to employees of private and public schools. I think that Mr. Clarkson's right. In the present language, school teachers and administrators and staff members. So I would support that amendment. With respect to human services providers, I think that as defined, is a broader than social workers, and I like the new language. I think that's important. It covers classes of people other than social workers. Similarly, child care providers. Why shouldn't somebody in an unlicensed daycare center have to report? Whether or not they're licensed doesn't have anything to do with whether or not they should be protecting the children by reporting child abuse. And so I'd like to see the question divided.
What's
a
child? Well,
a babysitter.
I think a babysitter should have to report.
Some babysitter. We're not talking about the drug babysitter that comes into the
evening.
Not necessarily care provider.
But
we've also got babysitters.
It says adult.
It does say adult.
Who have less than the required number of provides, and they watch it every day.
It's only adults. We made that clear in the next bill.
Right. 16 and up.
Actually, I think what we're talking about is the babysitting situation where the mother's got two kids of her own and she brings in one other additional, and for a weekly fee or monthly fee.
Anything up to five.
Yeah. Who's an adult?
18.
Over 18.
Where's that before?
He has 25.20.01, approximately. Maybe it's 0.15.
Give or take.
Give it there and I'll find it. Yeah, it is.
What's your wish?
I move that we divide it.
I would prefer to divide the question, although I also want to go to lunch pretty quick. But let's divide it and see what we can do.
Can I make a suggestion?
Can we get an explanation, maybe? Well, never mind.
We have just highlighted several of these. And maybe some conversation needs to go on before we actually start marking this up. Maybe this is an appropriate time to break your lunch.
I'd rather break your lunch conversation.
I think I see a center on the table. Let's do it. Let's try to get back here.
This says age of majority.
Do I understand, though, that we are omitting all of Section B? Because that I had that marked earlier.
Right.
We're keeping it in the present order.
proposed.
Of the proposed paragraph.
Or proposed.
Actually, we're deleting both.
Right, the judiciary work draft does delete B and C.
Right.
Right.
But it keeps a new B, and we were just limited to that as well, because we're just gonna pick up this kind of.
Mr. Chairman.
Okay, Mr. Phillips.
Also, since we're at lunch, you wanna discuss the Christian science?
Here is a copy of it. I don't know if it's in your packs or not. Let's make extra copies if not. Do we do that?
There are two. You've got one in.
Okay, right there. Unlike my prior instructions, which we, the chair himself failed miserably to follow, we will commence at 1:30.
Okay.
That's here, Claxton, here's the key.
I had the same concern as what you're talking about.
I'm not sure.
Cheers.
Do I need to be here just to say a few?
Oh, I don't think so.
That way you won't have.
Can I read your letter? The meeting will come back to order. This is, continues to be Saturday the 20th. We're starting almost on time. We're on, we're considering, I think some exceptional amendment by Mr. Fox, and I don't recall whether he actually made it or just mentioned he was going to.
Well, what I think we were talking about doing is working down through the, having amendments on each rather than deleting the section. I don't have any proposal on the practitioners and the healing arts and the definition, but I should feel, so we might want to talk about that.
I think it's now is the appropriate time to, if we're referencing the definition, to look at the definition. And the definition of practitioner of the healing arts is, on page 7, line 5. And I was talking before about eliminating psychiatrists, psychologists, and psychological assistants. Since then, I have received a letter. I do not have it. I mean, it's in my briefcase in my office. I could take 30 seconds to get it if you want, but I'll synopsize it. It's from Jim Harper, who's the president-elect of the Alaska Psychological Association, and he makes a very cogent argument that these categories, psychiatrists, psychologists, and psychological assistants, by the way, it should be psychological associates. That's the term in the statute.
Are we sure of that?
Yes, it is. I'm familiar with that. I think, you can check, it's entitled, Nancy, if you have title 08, if you look in there under psychologists, I think it's psychological associates.
Well, that makes a lot more sense.
I'll make that motion. But he says that there are so few people that are really trained in this specialty that they should be required to report. And I am convinced, and I'm happy to make that letter available to anybody, I'm not going to make my amendment. But Nancy, isn't that the
psychological associates.
So I would move to change the word assistance to associates.
Hearing no objection.
And I don't have any objection to the rest of the definition.
I would add one other person.
Go ahead, Mr. Stewart.
Midwives.
I'll second that.
Midwives?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Somebody that has to report?
Yeah.
What do they report?
They may very well see
you.
Oh,
the
I
kids.
See. I
this is where the birthing is supposed to take place. The rest of it, I would think she'd have an ideal opportunity to see.
We haven't really recognized.
Yeah, that's the problem.
I mean, you want to talk about
it. We passed a bill.
We did, but the Senate did.
And I think the word midwife appears in the statute somewhere.
I mean, the child is never more abused than at the time of birth.
Yeah, but there are other kids in
there. Mr. Chairman, I don't
know. No sense of humor at all.
I'm just trying to figure that out.
Trying to be careful. We're not sure where we're supposed to react.
It's the most traumatic experience one can go through.
Actually, whacked. Obviously, yeah, they're beaten. they cry.
I'll move the addition of midwife.
Well,
I think I would too, because, you know, I objected to the original bill that was on the floor, and until that licensing bill goes through, how do you know when you got a midwife or a midwife?
Just remember this argument when we get to her human services providers.
Well, okay, well, I might be consistent.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, I guess we all
don't
promise.
We've got nurses in here.
Well,
midwives. Yeah.
A nurse midwife would be covered.
Yeah, nurse
midwife,
yeah, she's
is
got
a nurse.
But Nancy's got something.
I was just going to say, under the index, there is provision midwives, but it only talks about midwife nurse.
Yeah.
And I think they're already covered.
They'd be covered under nurse.
Otherwise, midwife is not.
Yeah, because they have to have a license.
I see.
Well, let's look that stuff up, let's make sure. Nurses, nurse midwives?
Yes.
See, nurse midwives is more defined.
Well, they have to be an RN to be a nurse midwife.
Where?
Yes.
I can tell you that for sure, they have to be an RN to be a...
What I'm suggesting, Mr. Chairman, if this bill that's in the HAZ passes the Florida House, then maybe later on we can catch it. And you have something that's been recognized, identified, and because right now...
Mr. Chairman, then I would suggest that instead of an amendment, we have a letter of intent. That if the midwife bill passes, that this be amended to... So I don't want to have to deal with this statute again.
But you can't amend it with a letter of intent.
Right. No, can we say to the Senate that...
We'll send a note, if it passes.
We could just put the words in because we've been told by people who've been sending us POMs from all over the state that this has been going on forever and that it's a known thing and that there's hundreds and hundreds of them out there taking care of babies every day.
Yeah, and then you watch them come out of the loop.
They want to be part of the game.
The motion's still...
I know, I joined the club.
No.
Motion's...
Well, Robin's motion.
My motion.
Did you withdraw it or not?
Hmm.
Okay, the motion is to add the word midwives. As many as are in favor, raise their hand. Mr. Taylor, as many as are opposed?
Sorry, until they're recognized.
I'm trying to give those gals credibility.
Yeah.
Okay,
they can give you credibility.
Nice try, Robin, I'm sure.
I don't know, we necessarily want to take a vote, it's good by consensus. Do we want to leave practitioners of the healing arts in?
Oh, yeah.
Or is there more discussion than members want to make?
Oh, you have a definition?
I want to...
That's existing law.
I know it is.
Okay. Except for the changes.
Yeah.
Okay. Objection, whatever we got to do here. Christian Science Amendment here, does it fit in the definition?
No, not yet. They're already in the definition of practitioner of the healing arts, so they want it in another place.
They're a religious healing practitioner.
Right.
Which is at least as well.
I wasn't sure where the proper section was.
Doesn't that strike you as somewhat poetic justice? The practitioner of religious healing practitioner is asked to report, but a midwife doesn't.
Yeah, I know. That's why I kind of felt that.
Because a religious, the people who have to go into this, that isn't a doctor. Is their type of physician.
And you should have seen the midwife.
Yeah.
I mean, either that or
no,
it was
but
a
the
gross
midwives
optical
existed.
Illusion.
They were not. That was not the practice of medicine. That's the difference. The healing practitioners say it is the practice of medicine. They just do it for spiritual means. But let's don't get on to that.
I got the
okay.
So.
Let's block.
I moved to add naturopaths.
They're not licensed.
Yeah. Well, naturopaths are.
Mr. Chairman, on number two, I have a question for Connie. Under the existing language, which is school teachers and school administrative staff members, are those people in private schools covered?
Yeah. I'm not sure.
That's what I keep remembering that way back when, when we did start drafting 88, as Max mentioned this morning, we got stuff from all the offices and all, and that was a problem that was brought up, that somehow they didn't think schools were covered, but they must be. We think private schools are covered under that, don't we, Pat?
Oh, certainly.
We take that interpretation.
Sure.
Under existing law.
A school teacher
and school administrative staff, but there are a lot of other people who work for the school besides those two groups.
Bus drivers,
custodians,
nurses,
hang around with them a lot.
That's why we tried to expand it to school employees.
The point is that the custodian, first of all, isn't going to know he's covered by this statute.
Department of Education, rather than have us put in a bill requiring them to do it by law on training, passed regulations that the state school board is requiring all school districts to train all employees, is the way it's worded, not just teachers. Training is another really big issue with me I want to talk about later on.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to go back to the definition in the statute now, because these are people who are required to report. Mm-hmm. Just because the other people are trained to observe it, they can report all they want anyway. There's nothing holding anybody back from reporting.
Move it.
Well, yeah, I'd move the deletion of Actually, the way this, we're doing this is that we have to move to put the statutory language in on line 12. So I'd move to delete employees of private and public schools and insert school teachers and school administrative staff members.
You gonna delete the public, or I guess?
I think this takes care of it. School teacher is someone who is licensed in the state to be a school teacher, right?
You don't have to be in a religious school.
To be a certified school.
Well, they believe that those they are proposing private school teachers are covered.
Mr. Chairman, I was wondering if you would accept a friendly amendment to say school teachers and school administrative staff members in public and private schools, so there's no question.
Is there any problem with that?
That'd be good.
Red flag.
Red flags up, guys.
I'm just thinking that as a motion is rejected.
I just want to, that's just private, non-religious, or is all private?
Right. Oh. Religious school is.
Oh, boy.
No, they're covered right now.
Then why say it?
Just because of a lot of the motions that went around the religious school bill last year, a lot of people think they're not.
It doesn't say they're excluded, so.
I'm putting it in.
I don't care what kind of a school it is.
If there's child abuse, they ought to
watch the language.
What?
We're talking religious.
Okay.
School teachers and school administrative staff members of private and public schools.
Okay, so you're taking the interpretation. Let me just get this straight.
We're taking the word employees out and inserting school teachers and school administrative staff members. I take the interpretation that they're covered now. I think putting private schools in there run up red flag. It's unnecessary. But
I want there to be no question.
Apparently there is no question. The question is whether you want to.
Well, what's the practice now?
The practice?
Now, with religious private schools.
Our understanding is that they are covered, but since the school amendments happened last year, a lot of the private schools tend to think that they're sort of exempted from lots of various state laws. What we were probably most concerned with was we were trying to get at things like the teacher's aides, the paraprofessionals, people who are coaches and not teachers. That's why we were broadening.
I know, and that's what you're asking.
But
yeah, because this thing.
The
know,
department feels that private schools have to report.
Religious private schools.
Including
the bill we
religious.
Passed was.
That's right. Excluding religious.
I would. Move the amendment.
Yeah, well, I don't have any problems with it. I just want to
be aware of it.
Yeah, so it reads school teachers and school administrative staff members of private and public schools.
Is there objection to that motion?
My argument on school aides and teachers is that they can tell the teacher and then the teacher has to report.
Chairman, unless someone can come up with an amendment that's more precise, I'm going to move to delete 3.
The motion is
what's the definition? What's the definition?
Page 7, line 21.
What's the present language?
Social workers. Include individual human services coordinator, employee of a human services organization.
You have problems with the definition?
Mm-hmm. I mean, well, the definition tries to narrow it, but
give me an example.
It defines
what is an individual human services provider? I'm providing a human service at this table. First of all, very bad drafting to use.
Centers, counseling abuse centers, and they have titles like alcoholism counselor, drug counselor. They have all sorts of other names, and you have to use a kind of generic pool to get them. But they are professionals, and they're dealing with a lot of the same levels. And just depending on the community, they very well likely are going to be the person dealing with something rather than a doctor or a psychologist or someone else. I mean, if all I've got in the community is a mental health clinic that's got a mental health clinician but who's not a psychologist, that's who's going to hear these problems. Or if they got a, you know, drug abuse counselor, that's who's going to hear these problems. It was trying to get these people, not just to make it criminal. We're not so much in making it criminal. We're interested in giving them a sanction, the permission to report and the immunity for doing it, so that when someone wants to sue them, they have the immunity. The other thing Pat says it wants to reach was we wanted to reach the organizations like Big Brothers, Big Sisters, all of these cases that the public's been very concerned about.
I don't
think
most Big Brothers, individual Big Brothers and Big Sisters, I know they're human services. They're average citizens to take a tip for the week. You know, for
We're talking about the staff, the employees of the organizations, not every volunteer. Girl Scouts of America has a paid staff. Campfire Girls has some paid staff plus their volunteers. And it was for two reasons: one, to encourage them to report, one, and the second, to get an immunity.
Mr. Phillips,
well, isn't there any way to, you know, some of these guys have to be licensed or?
Yeah, that's true.
Isn't there some way to identify them as a certified, you know, like a non-profit organization? They must have something to do with the Boy Scouts of America. They're classified as non-profit.
All they have is a tax-exempt status from the IRS. We don't have any regulation in our state law. That's right.
Well, I'm trying to sort something out here. Maybe we could do that. You could set up... Still trying to figure out how to deal with those situations where we can't really define them. Maybe we could say something like, similar to what Robin just said, a human services provider is a person or organization that receives government funds to provide public services. I'm making it up as I go. But
for a tax exempt status?
Well, no, I think the key has to be, we're imposing a criminal obligation. Key ought to be the connection with the government money. What you're trying to pick up are the nonprofits that are performing services that are traditional government services, you might say. But they're doing it not with state workers, not with people that are easily defined.
College.
So it seems to me that you could, but the point is you're doing it by tracking government money, and that's maybe the way to do it.
We're going to get to, I hope to get that criminal penalty at some point.
Well, and then what I'm saying is all these people have a criminal penalty. So you're going to limit, my proposal is, I guess, that you limit it to those who are receiving government money to perform a public service, a government service, whatever, the public purpose. Just a minute. And then establish in the statute a second category, which is a category of people who must also report and who will receive the immunity, but for whom there is no penalty for failing to report. Does that make sense?
Who would be in that second category?
Second category
is the
child care provider that we think is too broad, the human services provider, the ones that we think are too broad, some of the others here that we're going to, the volunteers that work for domestic violence programs, unpaid people, people funded by churches, for example, where you can't trace government money and they're a volunteer, brothers and sisters, is to encourage them to report. Give them the immunity, but don't.
I would like to require these people to report. I think it's going to be cumbersome to have Group A, who are criminals, and Group B, who are encouraged. And I don't want to criminalize somebody because they don't report. I would like to see some kind of a civil encouragement and put them all in one category. Otherwise, it's going to make it administratively cumbersome to have two categories.
Well, but the principle is you've taken a clear, I've said this several times, you're taking a clear philosophical position that's in our statute now, that because you're a professional and because you deal with a kid in your professional capacity, you give up some of your freedom. That is, you've got to report child abuse.
I don't have a problem with that.
But if you start moving away from that professional capacity, then I think you ought to start easing off on the limitation of their freedom.
My amendment is to delete
human services providers and go back to social workers.
For the very reason you just stated.
Pat, if you want to say something.
Yeah, I'd rather go back.
Or just going to say.
Start moving away.
The department would rather see social worker than try and do the tying to government. I mean, I think we'd rather just go back to social worker than seeing the tying, or eventually see, I mean, I can see some real wisdom to maybe having everything be civil penalties and not be criminal, because then all of these concerns wouldn't be so great. If there was immunity for anyone, it could be two-step. It could be immunity for anyone in the world who made a good faith report, whether or not required to report, and only civil penalties for those required to report. I mean, maybe that would get, that seems to be what I keep hearing, is that we're so concerned about. There are people who want the immunity if they make a good faith report, and the statute says good faith.
Mm-hmm.
And then required reporting only being, maybe only being, so I haven't checked this out with the governor's office, but I...
Interestingly enough, the elder abuse statute, as we wrote last year, does provide immunity for anyone who reports elder abuse.
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
Now, why don't we do that instead of telling everybody who all has to report?
I like your suggestion. Well, you're going to have to tell some people.
Immunity for what?
You've got to tell some people. Civil or criminal liability that might otherwise be incurred or imposed. Good faith is a good faith
requirement.
A person who, in good faith, makes a report of a harm, I'm skipping some, harm to an elderly person, or who participates in judicial proceedings as a result of those reports, is immune from any civil or criminal liability.
Even if you caused the harm?
Fifth Amendment, right?
Well, you're still responsible for the harm. You're not, you wouldn't be responsible because you made a report.
You couldn't be fined for not reporting.
Right.
You'd still be
fined for
whacked
abuse.
For doing the abuse.
I'd rather not get into the whole immunity question.
You guys didn't want me to delete the whole section, so you gotta get it.
Well,
I'm in favor of going back to social worker, or staying at social worker, not going back. We're there. That's what the law is today.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we go back to social worker and put the rest of this language in that new bill, because it's going to take a lot of work.
Okay, that's fine.
For consideration, I really like your idea of putting everything under civil.
Always controversial.
We haven't got that. Just the way you just described it.
We can work on that if there's an interim bill for the interim, that's the
task committee.
Okay, we now
thanks.
Social limit. Okay.
Question?
I think by consensus we can read.
Any objection?
I don't have an objection.
What did we do with the whole section though?
Delete it?
Number three.
Two are identical. The next one that's different is number six. The existing language is licensed daycare providers and paid staff. The language is child care providers, and it's defined to be an adult individual or an employee of an organization who provides care and supervision of a child.
I like the language in the bill, because we were talking about this a little while ago. You got the person who doesn't happen to be licensed but takes kids into his or her home.
Brothers, big sisters.
No, I'm talking about
care of a child.
This requires a contract.
This is a care and who provides care and supervision to a child.
An adult individual who provides care and supervision to a child. That's a big brother.
No, they don't have supervision. They just take them out recreationally, fishing, bowling, whatever.
Oh, that's care and supervision.
I wouldn't have a problem to saying who for pay.
I thought we had a deal in here for the for pay or contract.
Who come up for compensation or pay?
Who for compensation?
Was that taken out?
Compensation or wages?
I would have swore it was in there during the subcommittee.
No, it's not in the HESS.
Who provides care and supervision to a child for compensation?
Well, that's agreed. Let's just do that. Do you have any problem with that coming?
We think that would be pretty good for compensation.
To a child for compensation?
Mm-hmm.
For compensation. Page 7120.
And if you're worried about the babysitter thing, they got to be over 18 before they come under this thing. And if we do something with the penalty,
that's it
wouldn't be too bad.
I want to do something.
My big problem on this one, Don, is that 80% of our kids that are housed in daycare facilities in the state right now are being housed in unlicensed facilities. And religious facilities that are exempt from licensing.
Yeah. Does this cover the religious daycare center?
This would, yep.
They do it for compensation. They might argue that
Covered under the current law?
Well, they might argue that they're not a childcare provider, that they provide preschool instead. Except for when they're claiming to be a religious preschool, and then they come under the school requirements.
Right.
So we ought to get, that ought to get come around to them.
We had a big problem with that in Anchorage last year.
Okay, I'm gonna.
The people under charges.
Let's focus, we got the amendment to the.
Religious daycare school.
The next one.
Let me just ask a question.
That was never in the bill.
I like this case, but the question is, are we extending a reporting, we're not extending anything that doesn't already exist.
Oh, yeah.
In the religious schools.
Yes.
We're clarifying.
See, the key question in the existing law is licensed.
Yeah.
Are religious daycare centers now licensed?
Some religious daycare centers are licensed because they choose voluntarily to be licensed to get daycare assistance. Others are not required to be licensed, and then if they actually have predominantly school activities or claim that they do, they can be exempted from licensing because they're a preschool.
So this would.
But they would report under school. Right, and then they'd report under school teachers and school administrators.
Let me ask you, is there a provision in here?
Let me finish this up here.
I'm sorry.
But this would say that a religious daycare, well, no, never mind, because they're daycare. Okay. Just remember. Is there a provision in here somewhere, an immunity provision?
Yeah.
There was.
Well, there's still gonna be in the statute, in this markup. It's at 4717.
050.
050. A person who in good faith makes a report under this chapter, or who participates in judicial proceedings related to the submission of reports under this chapter, is immune from any civil or criminal liability which might otherwise be incurred or imposed.
And we're gonna have to deal with that, but not.
Yeah, are we gonna deal with that?
Let's work through the.
Yeah, I think there's a problem.
I think Robin and several people want to, and the elder abuse is the model, but.
Just wanted to be, you're gonna bring that up.
Next is court administrators.
Investigators.
Court investigators.
Now, if you were willing to change it to court administrator, that's signed right off.
I like that. There is nothing in the law now, right?
No.
What are court investigators?
These are the people who do the custody investigations in the larger areas like Anchorage and Fairbanks. There are three or four of them.
Three in the entire state of Maine.
Why shouldn't the magistrates be required?
That was my point in putting it in.
That's a problem.
Because they are.
The court system doesn't wanna do it.
No, you gotta look at it philosophically. The person who's doing the reporting and is concerned about it has already made a decision that they're lining up on the prosecutorial side of this question. They're gonna be called as a witness. I don't really think you wanna put the judiciary in that position of requiring to do that. If they see something in their own personal life, in their own business life, they're not gonna see any of this. It's gonna come to them through somebody else already reporting it and being involved in the case. They're not gonna see it.
Well, first of all, they are gonna very possibly have it come out in testimony on an unrelated matter. But more importantly, I guess, do magistrates have the authority or the power to deal with all these things we've been talking about? Like review the petition on an emergency custody, for example, or anything, where they're gonna be involved as the judicial officer?
The only thing they can do is on emergency orders, they can take custody.
They at some places are using it, of course, to have them do the probable cause hearing.
Then it's a superior court judge that has to be pulled in to do it.
What was that?
They technically don't have authority under the statutes, but they do it in several places. Fairbanks has magistrates do probable cause and emergency custody hearings of kids on weekends.
Right.
Mr. Chairman, I'm gonna.
They have it in the statute.
I move to delete seven.
Yeah, that's on an emergency basis.
Mr. Sun moved to delete seven.
Wait a minute, wait just a second.
I don't think it's proper.
Okay.
It's not a proper role for the court to get into.
Mr. Chairman?
Great conflict.
I had a Hess version. Do you have the Hess? Okay.
The court personnel.
Yeah, court personnel. And what John wants to do is just delete it, so there's nothing, nobody in the court has to do it.
Right. That's the status quo, right?
Okay, let's take care of that motion, and then we can get to the question of personnel versus investigators if we don't delete the whole thing.
We're deleting the whole thing right now.
Well, that's the motion.
His motion is to delete seven.
Question.
Delete seven, there won't be any seven there. I don't think it's a proper role for the court to be forced to be in. If any are in favor of deleting item seven, raise your hand. Mr. Sun, Mr. Taylor,
Mr. Phillips. Opposed? Mr. Goodenberg, Ms. Miller.
Do I have to vote?
No.
Three to three wouldn't matter.
Doesn't matter unless you vote for it. Take four votes to adopt anything.
No, it doesn't. An amendment takes three votes, so the, with me not voting, it passes. The motion passes 3-2.
Right. You can abstain in this.
If you'd voted no, it would have been a tie, it would have been feasible.
So it passed.
Yes.
Number eight.
And volunteers.
Barbara McWills, or anybody work on that?
I don't think I did. I'm not sure there, that there is a place to tie it into. I mean, this is about as generic a description as there are.
Counsel on domestic violence and sexual assault are the ones that provide the grants to them.
But there certainly are shelters that someday won't get counsel grants.
What's a crisis shelter?
It's a place where a woman goes who's been abused.
Where?
Where is the counsel statute? Anybody know?
Oh.
Public safety.
I don't know. Sometimes I think my house is a crisis shelter.
Yeah.
It's
your house?
Well, I mean, what do you do? I mean, you know, some lady comes over, a friend comes over for crisis counseling, and
right. I hear you.
You do it, right? I mean, you help out all you can, or you now into the crisis shelter business.
I thought we were going to throw volunteers.
We did. I mean, that's my understanding.
Well, it says employees of domestic violence.
I think, Chairman, when you were reading, I think when you were reading through this morning, you did ask to put that back in.
Right.
And you said we should write, that the committee was to write this in.
Oh, okay.
I have that.
Mr. Chairman, that's going, if I may say, going against the general thrust of what we're doing here to have volunteers.
I mean, I'll move to delete 8 to get it on the table. I mean, it's going against the thrust of what we're doing here to include 8. If you're going to get down to the theory of non-professionals being required to report, so far we've held it to professionals.
You're having psychologists report.
I'm not sure that people that work in those don't consider themselves professionals.
Well, I mean,
somebody that runs a crisis center, I think, considers herself or himself every much as a professional as a social worker does.
That's why I asked what the definition of a crisis shelter was.
You know, you're having psychiatrists and psychologists report.
Just as professional.
It doesn't make any sense to exempt counselors and domestic.
Well, then say counselors.
For employees.
Well, we exempted employees. So you put the janitor of the crisis center, crisis shelter in there?
Okay, what do you suggest?
Delete it. That's my motion.
Okay, then why don't we say...
Just want to force you guys...
I mean, these are the people that are reporting most of this stuff anyhow. Why do we need to force them to?
They want immunity. They want to be required to by statute.
They want immunity. They don't want to be required to by statute.
Yes, they also want that because it's appropriate. It helps them a lot in the communities that they are not just somehow people who want to break up families, but they are doing what they're required by law to do,
right,
what is appropriate.
So when a gal comes in and she says she wants counseling and she's upset about things, and in the course of their discussion, she reveals enough evidence to the worker that the worker says, aha, he's been messing around with the kids, now he's going up. She then can walk in and report and still be wearing both hats. She could be counselor on one hand and prosecutor on the other, even though the wife is saying, I don't want you to touch the old man, leave him alone.
Well,
this gives her the justification to say, no, honey, you're crazy, I'm going to do this for you, whether you want it or not, and I have to by law, right?
I suppose the psychologist
is the
same thing. That's what every one of these people has to do.
Did the janitor there get it?
Mr. Goodenberg, then Mr. Clark. I move to change the motion, to amend the motion. To instead of saying employees of domestic violence programs, to say counselors in domestic violence programs, sexual assault programs, or crisis programs. So that exempts the janitors.
Okay, Mr. Blunt. We have an amendment to amendment, so I cannot offer another amendment, but should either or both of those be defeated, I would offer an amendment that would have number 8 read, paid employees of domestic violence programs and crisis intervention and prevention programs as defined in AS 1866-900.
But that would include janitors.
Staying with the...
You have a paid janitor. You want the janitor to report?
Yeah. They aren't big enough. I mean, there's a difference in a janitor in a school district of 10,000 employees and a janitor in a domestic violence crisis shelter with 5 employees.
Chairman, okay, I'll stay with the...
I'll withdraw
my proposed amendment. Staying with the typical action of the Judiciary Committee. Just lost me on that last... Well, no, we always law amendments. We'd get progressively worse here, right? Rather than starting with deletion of the entire thing, we start with the amendment.
So have you two both withdrawn your
amendments? Yeah, we're going to give you a chance.
Where are we now?
Okay. Both are...
There's no amendment on the floor.
There's no amendment on the floor. You want to propose an amendment?
I move that Section 8 be amended to read as follows. Paid employees of domestic violence programs and crisis intervention and prevention programs, and those are terms of art that are defined, as defined in AS 1866-900. Mm-hmm. Happy to show you the
definition. Domestic Violence Council.
I really like everything you got there. What if we said, and counseling volunteers, or volunteer counseling, because as I understand it, maybe I'm wrong on this, there's a lot of people that do a lot of counseling down there that are not paid, but they're doing it. They're doing professional job, and I'm not talking about somebody that wants to go down there on weekends and just hold hands and be social. I'm talking about somebody that's actually helping somebody.
Well, if they're a health care provider, they're already covered. Or a practitioner of the healing art.
Well, no, I'm not talking about that. A practitioner of the healing art is entirely different. Mr. Clarkson?
If we're going to be consistent, we have required that the child care provider is covered only if they're being paid. Seems to me we ought to do the same thing here. Keep in mind that one thing that we're doing when we repeal and reenact this is to eliminate the language in the existing statute that says these people have to report if they discover it in performing their professional responsibilities. Then there's another section back there that says if you notice at home, you may report, but you're not subject to it. I think that the language in the existing law is the following persons who, in the performance of their professional duties, have cause to believe that the child has suffered harm, etc. That in the performance of their professional duties is being eliminated.
Why are we doing that?
In the draft, you talk about non-occupational capacities.
Right, and that's the existing existing immunity.
Subsection
we're going to
B.
Fix that. The person that's...
I think that the only reason that was suggested as a change in 88 was not that we necessarily thought these people had to report what happened at their next-door neighbor's house, but because some of them weren't necessarily professionals anymore, like the child care provider. But we could be changed, the word could be changed to occupational very easily in the language reinserted that used to be as an introduction.
That would solve this whole thing.
It's called it occupational instead of professional.
Yeah, I'd rather use the word occupational because I have serious reservations about what anybody is or is not in professional. Right. Just because some gal's out here at the Aware Center or whatever, and she's getting paid to be there and has done some counseling, who trained her? Where'd she come from? Did she have any psychological screening profile she went through before she was hired? Does she belong in the association? Does she pay dues to anything? Is there anybody that monitors her work or inspects it? No, none of those things.
What's the matter with the definition of A as it is in the statute today, changing professional to occupation?
Actually, that's a good point. Maybe you ought to just restore all the language in sub A of the existing law, because remember we eliminated all the stuff that says where you report to.
Yeah, that was her own offer.
We got a motion on the floor, but I think the next one would be the one John suggests. Mm-hmm.
Okay, well. You want to just deal with that motion as it is right now? Or do you want to start?
I would.
Okay, let's
the motion.
Okay, restate your motion the way it
is. I know.
Eight would read, paid employees of domestic violence programs and crisis intervention and prevention programs as defined in 1866-190.
Is your objection to that motion?
You got that, staff?
Hearing none, the motion passes.
Then, Mr. Chairman, I would move to replace the language starting following the A on line 8.5. Replace that language down through child on line 9.5 with the language that's in the existing law, except that professional would be deleted and occupational would be inserted. Let me read it then. And Connie, if there's any other things I have to pick up in this. So the lead in to A would read, the following persons who, in the performance of their occupational duties, comma, have cause to believe that a child has suffered harm as a result of abuse or neglect, shall immediately report the harm to the nearest office of the department.
That'd be fine with the department. Very correct. Quite correct.
Anybody have any objection to that?
Why was that eliminated?
Partially because it said report harm to the office of the department, and there was that section B that had, and C that had some reports going to the police, the
right.
Complicated cross
complicated.
Reporting.
Well, this is the complicated.
Yeah,
right.
Who that's do out. They report to now?
Under current law.
I mean, under this.
Under so this, they report to the Department of Health and Social Services unless they can't reasonably contact the nearest office, then
yeah,
they're
okay,
supposed to tell
the
cop.
They roll over to the cops.
Cop.
Yeah.
Right.
And then you screen and make decisions about which one go on for criminal investigation.
Well, no, we have to actually file a copy of our report of harm with the Department of Law on every single one within 72 hours. That was put in the law in 1982.
Okay. I hear no objection to that. That's enough.
Yep. Okay, now I have a conforming amendment, which unfortunately requires that we reinsert B. Because the existing B also uses the word professional and needs to be changed to occupation.
Now, are we talking about this or the present?
Well, look at the existing B. It starts out, this section does not prohibit the named individual from reporting cases which has come to their attention in their non-professional capacity. That should be their non-occupational capacity.
Well, there. Which B is it?
The
B
is take page 5, there. Don, that you got crossed out.
Right there.
Just reinsert it.
But there was some difference.
Well, there is. We just got to add a sentence.
All we have to do is add a sentence to one of the five, and the last sentence would say, these reports shall be made to the nearest
okay.
office of the
that's
department.
That's the way to do it.
Yeah.
So we're back in.
Mm-hmm.
B is back. I moved
back. B is back in. Okay, and so back on line 8, we'd have to amend A and B are reappealed and reenacted.
With that.
Right. You getting this, Nancy? Actually, the way that it ought to be done, if I can, Mr. Chairman, is section 10 should still read 020A. Is repealed and reenacted.
Mm-hmm.
And then a new section should be inserted down on line 21 that says AS 4717020B is amended to read.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. And then we don't have to worry about these other two sections
that
we took out.
And you don't have to restate C. And I'll move that.
Is there objection to that? There is none, that's enough.
With that last sentence kept in. You got that?
Are we finished?
I got
a question, overall question
here.
Can you finish with that section?
I am finished with 020.
Okay.
020.
Now, I'm interested in this number 2, employees of private and public schools. We're getting into, freedom of religion aspects. Now, I don't mind the intent. Intent and what you do are two different things. I think my concern right now is how is this going to be enforced in which way? Because here we go back to theory versus what we really would have out there. Because I think this could be possibly a real big problem. I think we ought to just look at it one more time.
First of all, let me make one argument, which is an argument that was repeated many times last year. There is a difference between private and religious. There are private non-religious schools, and I believe that they should not be protected from the obligation to report. Secondly, I think that Connie could probably confirm that the practical effect of this is relatively small, because I don't know that there are too many prosecutions for a B misdemeanor.
We don't
report.
Know of any.
So the practical effect is zip. but on the other hand, I'm not sure that we should be exempting private institutions.
And
one thing is, we're not talking about property, we're talking about
immunity. Yeah, immunity is the other half.
Okay, and this is including both,
that's right,
both religious and non-religious private schools. I'm just thinking that
those people that we exclude may not be immune. They may be running a risk when they report for the other people are immune.
Okay.
Well, let me just take one more further here. Because I'm, you know, really concerned about this section and its practicality. And I can just see a couple people saying, well, this is an interference of freedom of religion.
No,
and I want to hear a response.
Look, Mr. Chairman, if they want to stand up there and say they don't want to report child abuse because it's not part of their religion to report child abuse, let them make that argument. I will not accept that argument.
Well, the argument...
They sold us on it for schools. But when it's a question of child abuse, that argument is...
I know, but Don, I know what you're saying. You're reacting to what they're saying. You got to make this thing, at least in my mind, rational.
Are you offering your amendment?
No, I'm not offering your amendment. I just want it. I like the way it is, what I'm saying. But I think, you know, we should better understand what's going on here because you're going to have problems. And these people are going to come out and, you know, some guy is going to sit there and say, this is an invasion of my freedom of not speech, but of religion. And then we're going to be getting floods of letters and so on and so forth. And then we're going to be all entangled up with this freedom of religion routine. And that's the problem.
Probably a first amendment.
And I'm interested in how they're going to handle it.
I would say, we had some discussion this the other day in Senate Judiciary, and I thought maybe I could get a response. The teacher who is teaching as an occupation in a religious school, who's not in the religious school as a pastor or some kind of counselor to the school, is in the occupation of being a school teacher, and like any other school teacher, it is rational for them to have to report child abuse. The other day it was asked, even if you took it so far as a person who is a pastor at the church on Sunday and who teaches at the religious school Monday through Friday, I actually challenge people to think about the fact that if it's the child who indicates to that person, to that pastor, that they have been abused, either verbally or by the bruise under their eye, that the pastor, parishioner privilege is between the pastor and that child, not between the pastor and the family. And that they would probably still feel bound to report, and even at the extreme level.
I know what you're saying.
Which, right, we can't get rid of all the objections.
I mean, they're going to sit there, and they're going to say, you walk in there and say, well, we understand. You know, I have a case right now in my district, and I can just see it happening right now, if it breaks wide open. Now, it involves, first of all, a church, and it involves a daycare center, which probably requires some teachers in it, okay? And then you walk in there and say, we're going to check this out because we got a report. Okay? And the point they're going to make is freedom of religion and get everybody worked up. Now, how are you going to handle a situation like that?
Okay, right now, you're talking about the reporting, which is if someone reports right now, we will go in with a social worker, and if necessary, if there's any serious enough evidence, we would probably go in with a police investigator if there's really a child being abused, and that they are not exempt from either the criminal or the child abuse statutes.
I'm not getting your question, I'm sorry. I'm more interested in how it's going to be handled. More than, I agree, I think the child's more important, but, you know, I've dealt with this many times before, and then, you know, some of you guys from outside the Anchorage area, you're not dealing with it, but these people sometimes
I can give you, if it will help, I can give you a legal answer. You want to help you?
No. I mean...
Not necessarily.
Robbie, you know what I'm saying?
I think what's happening is we're confusing here. Anybody privilege has always been granted to the cloistered confessional. That's a privilege granted to the cloth, so to speak. And getting that privilege of the cloth confused with the employees of the church who may be doing other sundry or related objectives of the church, training children or taking them on camping trips or whatever they're doing with them, a summer camp for the kids. We're getting that confessional aspect confused with the workaday aspect of it. And the complaints that we had from the ministers as far as reporting in the subcommittee work we did on this were that they in their confessional duties did not feel they could be obligated to report, but that their people working under them, assistant pastors, etc., doing ministerial functions, but not the confessional kind of function, could be required to report. And if they came up with a definition of like church counselors or something, as opposed to something being different from an actual minister or pastor. I understand exactly.
I'm not arguing against what's in there.
But there, we also realize there's a tremendous number of children in this state that are being housed and have custody in everyday church or religious, quote, related facilities.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chairman, I just want to hear that. Because, somebody's going to look back at these minutes of meeting and we haven't considered it. So. I was going to move that, but it's got to have one word in there that has to be added.
Why don't we discuss the amendment before we move it so we don't get into our big procedural matter.
What amendment are you talking about?
Mm-hmm. Christian Science Amendment.
That goes toward the back.
Right here. Right there.
That's the last thing. You're right. Okay.
Just for committee note, it would become a subsection D, small d as in David.
Well.
But just, that's right. That'll be the other
one. You got it down.
Mr. Chairman, there's two changes I think need to be made. I'm looking now not at the letter, but at the one that was apparently prepared by Connie.
It isn't being changed.
The first, on the second line of the amendment, I think we ought to delete the language as neglect of a child. That's not entirely accurate. The proper phrase is a child has suffered harm as a result of abuse or neglect. So I think that's not correct, and I think the sentence would read better if you just delete it. So it says the section does not require a religious healing practitioner to report the failure to provide, and so on. And the second change is on the third line after treatment, reinsert the word solely. Was there any reason you deleted that, Connie?
right here. This is what they're suggesting.
No, this was what I got earlier, and then I think since that time, Richard Block had time to refine it and send Chairman Miller
this letter. So to provide treatment solely by spiritual.
Right. Right.
I got it over the telephone.
Could you read it word for word?
Well, just what I have is this section does not require a religious healing practitioner, which is a word that's used in the definition here. To report the failure to provide medical attention to the child if the child is provided treatment solely by spiritual means through prayer in accordance with the tenets and practices of a recognized church or religious denomination by an accredited practitioner of the church or denomination.
Just striking the words as neglect of a child.
Mm-hmm. And inserting solely.
Inserting solely.
Mm-hmm. I think the solely is, on my discussions with Dick, that was critical.
Key.
That was a critical language.
Yeah, well, that separates the.
And that would be a D, and I would be a man.
Jeff. Okay, that's here. Yeah. The objection is that in some of these tight communities that are very tied up with some churches, there may be virtually no contact, particularly with a small child who is not going to school. And there may be a child who has a very serious illness or a broken limb of some type. And there should be some mechanism to determine whether the kid needs medical attention. And here, the only person outside the family who has any contact with the child may be the spiritual healer. And I think in a case of this type, the religious needs of that family do not take precedence over the physical needs of that child. And there's a line of cases starting with the first case, whether a person was prosecuted in Utah for bigamy. And the question was, do they have a constitutional freedom of religion right? In the classic constitutional sense, it's a free exercise case. So they have the right to freely exercise Mormonism. And the Supreme Court said, no, they don't, that there's an interest in the state in protecting health and welfare of its citizens in a case like this that takes precedence. And there's a long line of family law cases where people have said, you know, you don't have any right to take custody of my child, state of New York, because I am praying over the child. And there's a very well-established line of cases, and I feel strongly that the child needs to take
custody. There's a lot of blood transfusions in there.
Blood transfusions, that kind of thing.
Here's what you're asking, Ed, is that this practitioner, in his or her mind, is a practitioner of the healing arts. Whether it's a broken arm or it's a common cold or whatever the thing is, their view is that they have an acceptable and adequate medical remedy for the problem. So you're saying you're going to make it a crime if somebody calls to them to practice their brand of medicine. You're going to make it a crime if they don't say you have to call in an MD.
Suppose
and
the child...
Well, no, here's the point. There is remedy for that. In the first place, that practitioner is not going to be the only person in the world who knows about it.
Might be, and some of these...
And, well, if this is the case, then the parents probably won't even call in this practitioner. If they know that by calling in a practitioner, the person is going to have to refer them to a medical doctor, then, you know, you're putting everybody in an impossible position. This does not exclude them from reporting abuse. They fully agree that if they see evidence of abuse by the parents under the reporting statutes that we've got up here, they are fully prepared and accept the fact that they are supposed to report that abuse. But what they're saying, even in our public employee statutes, we allow medical, you know, the health plan that you sign up under, a Christian Science practitioner, I'm not a Christian Scientist, so I should point that out, but a Christian Science practitioner can collect as a medical person for that service. So how are you going to say in one, in one hand that is a medical person, and he's even eligible for public employee, pay for or insurance purposes, and in the other hand saying, if they've got a broken arm, they can't. That person can't treat it. I personally would never treat my kid only with prayer. But that's
okay. To respond,
this is a reporting statute, guys. Mm-hmm. It's reporting child abuse. It's not killing lives or killing people or something. Mm-hmm.
Well, what
mending broken arms.
What we have is up in the first section here. The following persons are required to report abuse or neglect of a child. And one of those in sub 1, practitioners of the healing art, includes religious healing practitioners.
Oh, so now wait a minute. That's the reason he wanted that language as neglect. That reminded me, we probably, right. If we were going to be consistent with Mr. Block's thing, we probably should not have taken that out. Because we're saying, does not require a religious practitioner to report as neglect.
Not abused.
But as neglect.
What they're trying to say, what they're trying to do here, is to say that religious healing practitioners must report abuse, but they need not report neglect if that neglect could be found as, and we went through this morning, the failure to provide medical treatment, because you got a kid who's hemorrhaging internally, and the parents don't take them to a qualified doctor, but take them to a religious healing practitioner. And while all of this is going on, the child doesn't get medical attention and dies.
Well, there's other provisions.
It's gutting.
Mr. Chairman, there are other provisions in the statutes. It's the same way we get into the blood transfusions on... Is it Seventh-day
Adventist?
No,
Seventh-day
Adventist. Seventh-day Adventist. You know, we get at that through the Child in Need of AIDS sections of the statutes now.
But the thing is that this would never come to the attention.
They generally do come to somebody's attention.
Let me finish one second. 4710 is the mechanism that the state uses once the state becomes involved. It starts out with the jurisdiction of the court over this. But to get the child into the system, you start out with 4717. Many times, the child would come in contact with someone. Let me give you an example. There are some religious communities down the Kenai. They're not Seventh-day Adventists.
Russian.
They're not, yeah.
Russian.
Yeah. And you're going to have some people out in the bush who are really possibly highly religious, people who don't come in contact. The kids may be at home learning centers because the parents don't send them. They may be too isolated. And literally, the only people they would, this little child, I'm talking about a baby who has maybe whooping cough, a baby who may have rubella, who may not even be getting inoculated. And the kid has not had contact with anyone except possibly a religious healing person.
And you're going to ask that religious healing person to commit crime, to go against the tenets of his religion.
I'm asking him to take steps if it may be necessary to save the child's life.
No, but Chief, his method is every bit as valid as your view.
Medically.
Does not fit in that line of cases. This is a case of a law that makes criminal the establishment of a religion, the operation of a religion.
Well, okay.
It's not that line of cases.
Let me ask this next. Does a tree falling in the woods make any noise? Nobody can hear it.
Yeah,
it does.
What is the relevance?
It's the same relevance you're making. Is that you can't show me a case. You can't show me a case of religious neglect that resulted in death of a child.
Because it never comes to anyone's attention.
We got it.
But what Don was saying was that this is a criminal statute. No, it's a reporting statute. And we're going to deal with
that. Don't report it's a crime.
But we'll deal with that separately in the penalty.
Well, we're going to keep it a crime. I think we're going to keep it
Well, then why not exempt? I don't care about that. I don't want to criminalize these people. Let's make it a criminal exception. So that, and a matter of fact, there is.
It is an exception to the
Title 11. These people have already got an exemption in Title 11 that says, and it's in the child abuse section.
What's the number? Criminal non-support.
No.
Yeah, that's where it is. It's in the criminal non-support. And there's an exception to the criminal non-support. I just don't know the side.
Okay.
We testified about it the other day in the Senate.
They're already immunized from a crime. Here, and I don't have any problem in making them immunized further. I just want to make sure
that's got nothing to do with the problem.
Well, that's what he just said.
You know, that's the problem. You can't force somebody to report that what they're doing is not what they contend it is. I mean, that's just like requiring an MD to report that somebody's
that
in need of chiropractic treatment.
This bee is to me.
That bee is to me. Which is why this just like the
You're already doing that here. Right. You're saying
okay. No. Let's deal with the language.
B and C from this part are both out.
Okay.
Old C is okay.
Old C is okay.
See why you want that in there? I thought you were right.
Yeah.
Grammatically,
yeah.
But it's real emphatic. I see that as neglect.
Suppose
they want to report abuse, they don't want to report people of neglect.
Suppose you have
both of these are out.
Otherwise, they've got to report their own treatment as being neglect of a child.
That's right.
Okay.
So you can't ask people to do that.
Okay. What about an osteopath?
An osteopath is an MD, only with a different set of initials.
Right. But osteopaths use certain mechanisms for treatment, right? I mean, they use...
Manipulation, among other things.
Yeah.
Sort of
and suppose you have an osteopath. We just haven't had the osteopaths before. Come on. Suppose you have an osteopath and he's using his form of treatment and it's not working. This language now would require him to direct the people to go get a doctor or, you know, some other
former
of treatment. Yeah. It's the same kind of thing. It just doesn't have to be religious.
Yeah, lawyer.
Well, that's a huge difference. Whatever they
are. Osteopathy. They're doctors, though, I think.
They're doctors. They're not. That's not a religion.
Okay, let's go back to the language.
I'm real big on it.
I can withdraw my amendment.
Mr. Clarkson. What about the solely portion?
You're
well, he's got it.
Solely needs to stay in writing. So I guess I am going to offer this language again, but with the solely after treatment.
And otherwise, as typewritten?
As typewritten. So I thought about some ways to refer to the definition of neglect, but it makes a real weird.
Okay, well, let's deal with that, and then we can get back to this.
With respect to the reporting.
You maintain your objection?
Yeah. With respect to the reporting. how do you ensure the blood transfusion type case gets reported?
Same way it gets reported right now.
Same way it gets reported now.
Which is?
Somebody blows a whistle.
Yeah,
somebody else blows a whistle.
The way it gets reported, honest to God, Max, right now, is that's the ones who went to the hospital to have the baby, the nurses picked up on it, and so did the doctor, and the Jehovah Witnesses were happy to have the doctor until he wanted to transfuse the blood, and that's when they wanted to take the kid out of the hospital. We went through two of those in about a year and a half. Now we don't have to worry about that anymore, because they're not going to go near a hospital. They're going to have our wonderful midwifers take care of them in the home, and that's where the kid's going to die, and nobody's going to know about it.
They still
like the kid.
Mr. Bilson, Mr. Fox, Mr. Miller, Mr. Sun. Opposed, raise their hands. Mr. Taylor and Mr. Grimble.
Mr. Taylor.
See, because now we start to report 3 out of 4 things.
It was about 3 or 4 weeks ago, and I just happened to catch it on the news here. It was a case, I believe, either in Utah or maybe Illinois, where a child, a 14-year-old girl, waited an operation, and somehow the court intervened. And she died later after the operation. It was too late. And I believe it's Christian Science. Anybody know anything about that particular case? But I know the court intervened.
The law where they do intervene.
Yeah, there are times.
So I thought it might jar somebody's memory. You know? I would be talking.
No, Max is just trying to explain to me why I should be more concerned with the kid than the practitioner. But I have 2 kids, Max.
But no practitioner.
They have enough attention as it is right now.
It's easy enough for
I'm
us.
I'm afraid to touch my daughter anymore. Jeez, we were rolling around in bed playing this morning, and Christ, I come in here and I committed 3 crimes.
Are we here
already,
with services providers? I think we have to report that.
Okay, next now this proposed amendment. This amendment, all we did was amend the word solely after treatment, right?
That's right.
We still have not yet inserted this as a section, have we?
I thought you were moving
that.
Yeah, I was still moving that as type.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I was moving
it.
Did you not know that you were doing?
I thought we were just talking about solely, and I was voting against it.
It would be B. It would be B.
I have one other thing I want to put on the record.
Can I vote again?
This entire phrase speaks about a recognized church or religious denomination. Recognized has solely been a matter of the passage of years. If tomorrow a new religious group starts up and they happen to have a little better witch doctor than these other guys do as far as throwing seeds over your head or dancing around and making noise, they're not going to be recognized. So maybe they do a better job of it than the other folks do statistically. So they're going to be criminal until such time.
They'll soon be recognized.
I asked that same question.
That would be a perfect example. I can't ever pin it down.
Let's
go on.
I know. I don't have a lot of.
Okay, some of the greatest wars in this world have been fought for religious purposes.
Greatest wars?
They have an exemption for criminal non-sport.
I believe he's having
a good time. Vietnam, I would call
him. I mean, he didn't even need an opera.
All right. Next proposed amendment. Robin, did you want to change your vote on putting that into the bill?
What?
This year, you weren't sure what you were.
I voted against it.
And you would have voted against
it? I would have voted against putting in the bill also.
You got it all in one then.
The next thing I have, Mr. Chairman, is on page 6, line 19. So
for the Christian Science.
6, line 19.
Because they're lawyers, I guess.
I wish we had done something with the Baptist that you snaked.
What?
Baptist
Mr. Chairman, I may have missed some testimony or whatever. This is the language in the section 14 of the judiciary draft, or page 10, starting on line 7 of the Hess substitute. I might have missed some testimony on that. I do not understand the need for this. Are you telling us that you cannot, under a Title 47 action, get a protective injunction? Why do we need it? We have a criminal statute, and we have a Title 47. You're saying, I may have missed some testimony. What's the problem here?
The big problem there, Chairman Miller, this is the protective injunction section. The biggest problem is the unlicensed daycares who aren't licensed, have four children, because nobody had any controversy until we got to Section 14, but it's the unlicensed daycares is probably the biggest thing. They don't have a license. We can't take away their license. They're not engaged. They're not now engaged in criminal activity, but they are incredibly high risk to a child because they've maybe been, their own children may have been taken from them, termination of parental rights. They may have been convicted of child sexual abuse in another state. We had a daycare like that, one of the unlicensed daycares out in Palmer, I think.
No, we had a one daycare operator that was breaking children's legs. And
well, that's a crime. I mean, you got to take the cases that we couldn't criminally prosecute. There are cases where we've got people who, you know, are a danger to children, and we can't limit them from running a daycare center.
Well, one, two, and three are easy,
it's a crime.
I think.
That's right, and sometimes you can't
prove
it's a crime.
Four is the key to this, which is a potential, basically what you're saying is a potential, not an actual danger, a potential injury.
Well, this was why we made this.
Didn't we call those something?
Protective injunction. Well, this is.
No,
we're requiring substantial danger.
We're requiring substantial danger. We're requiring that the Attorney General has to be, you know, DFYS isn't going to do this. We have to get the Attorney General persuaded. And then the Attorney General is going to have to persuade the court to the standards of an injunction, you know. Irretrievable harm and.
Future crimes. A crime that. Make it a wrong or something that you might do, not may have done.
That's been challenged. So that would be the definition of that law of excuse.
The one in
Wisconsin. Yeah, well,
you know, as a bit of history, I might say that Don Edwards recommended this, first in the licensing statute, but since it was those who fell outside of the licensing statute, he decided this was the most appropriate statute to put it in. We have obtained injunctive relief before against operations that weren't licensed, but it was through court precedents rather than a statute, rather than having statutory authority.
What it was, I assume, is, see, I'm having trouble fitting this in the system, the judicial system. What normally an injunction is entered once litigation based on usually a statutory claim has been started, right? File a lawsuit and then you ask for a temporary restraining order or preliminary injunction. This seems to be creating a new cause of action.
Yes, and there are done.
Creating a new cause of action.
If I may
what
answer.
What is the cause of action?
The cause of action is to seek a permanent injunction against the person. Don, let me go back.
There's got to be a cause of action, which means there has to be some.
There is a cause.
Activity which is wrong.
What is the substantial danger? Is that what you're
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And Don, if I may speak to that, I mean, that was sort of an area that I spent a lot of time on. In equity law, there are quite a few things which what is wrong is that you are this danger to children. Mm-hmm. You have and you are now having lots of contacts with children. You are continually signing yourself up as a Boy Scout leader, and the Boy Scouts kick you out, and then you sign yourself up as a Cub Scout leader, and they kick you out as soon as they figure out what you like. Or your wife is running a daycare center, and you insist on hanging around with the kids, even though she holds the license, and you have been convicted of child sexual abuse. You are a danger to children. You know, there's going to be some present activity, not just mm-hmm. something past, that mm-hmm. indicates the danger, but you don't hold the license, we can't
there's
take
no
it away
crime.
From you. And
person
there isn't
is not
a crime.
Committing a crime.
But they are a danger to children in a facility that is taking care of children. And that we, you know, have been told we should try to do something to protect and to keep this sort of a person. We're asking, they can be restricted, can be told, I mean, the injunction, remember,
but
injunctions are flexible.
I'm having trouble with figuring out, I don't care what the remedy is. Once you've established a cause of action, the remedy's fine. But even in the domestic violence area, you tied it to an act, which is a criminal act.
Oh, I'm sorry, all right. Here,
the
action is the person is having contact with children when he or she is a danger. And the action, the cause of action, is to ask for a restricted access. The introductory section, A.
Join or limit a person to
contact with a child.
No, it does not mean.